Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Tuesday. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. We say hello now to our man Teron Davenport from ESPN. TD, what's up?
What's going on, man? It's a beautiful morning.
It is a beautiful morning. We've been sitting here talking about, you know, what the Preds did yesterday, and then we got into a discussion on the Spice Girls, so it's kind of been all over the place this morning. But I was texting you over the weekend. You went to the Ally 400 at the Nashville Super Speedway, your first NASCAR race, and, like, it warmed my heart to see how excited you got about going and witnessing it all for the first time, because I've been a NASCAR fan my whole life. But how did this all come about, and what was your experience like?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm a NASCAR fan. Like, it's not going to be here and me be here and I'm not being there, put it that way. It came about, so Alvin Kamara, he has a big drive for diversity in NASCAR, and there's an organization called Speedway Season, and they invited me out, and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing anything, so I'll do it. And it turned out to be something that I was so glad that I did. And, you know, walking in the pit and seeing all the cars, I bumped into Bubba Wallace. Well, purposely bumped into him. You know what I mean? And, you know, said what's up to him. I met Denny Hamlin, who I texted and was like, hey, that's my guy right there.
Yeah.
You know, so it was cool just being there and feeling the energy. The energy that you feel from those cars driving by is crazy. It's such a charge, man.
So you were watching from the pits?
Yeah, I was watching from the pits. I was hanging out by, you know, the 23XL pit for a bit, because I was hoping that maybe Michael Jordan, because they said MJ ends up kind of chilling and hiding out there sometimes, and you might catch him. So I was chilling there for a little bit, but I spent most of the time over there by Denny Hamlin's pit and just watching those guys, you know, change the coordination and everything that they did. And actually, I met a young lady named Brianna Daniels. I don't know if you've heard of her,
mm-mm,
but she was the first black female to be in a pit. She's a tire changer.
Oh, wow.
And she actually, the crazy thing, she made history in 2017 here in Nashville. I think it was when it was at the fairgrounds. And she was the first black female to, you know, be a part of the pit crew. And it happened right here in Nashville. So I got to talk to her for a bit, and it was really interesting to me. Just NASCAR is a lot more diverse than we realize, you know,
yeah.
Because and walking through the pits, like I saw, you know, black people, I saw Asian, I saw Spanish. Like, it's not just like people associate it as like a hillbilly sport, and it's not that. And the coordination that they have, you know, in doing everything, and it's pretty interesting because what I was told is a lot of the pit crew, they're leaning more towards former athletes.
Yes.
And so like Brianna Daniels, she was a basketball player at Norfolk State, and they actually have a combine for pit crew members is there in Charlotte. So there's a whole story to be told about that. I'm really going to twist my editor's arm to see if they'll allow me to tell the story. But man, like, I fell in love with the sport, and like, I'm really excited about the next opportunity. I got some things to figure out in October because there's a race in Charlotte, you know, on one of the Sundays, and they have a combine there too. So we'll see what happens.
Teron, I was asking Chase this. You know, it's funny. You make a good point. You know, you think they just show up and then they race, but there's so much that goes into everything. What were you most impressed by with the process you saw this weekend out there? Because, like, I mean, you talk about pit crews, you talk PR staff, you talk racers, you talk spotter. I mean, there's so much that goes on that it's like, wow. What was the thing that impressed you the most?
I can't help but point to how coordinated that pit crew is. I mean, yeah. You know, they know when the guy's about to pit, you know, stop and make a pit stop. And you know, they have all the way down to the little orange tape that they have lined up to tell the guy exactly where to stop. And then they have the individual signs that they hold up along with the sign that's poking out with the number. And as he's pulling up, like you see them start getting the gas thing ready. They spray it. And then, you know, they have the jack ready, the tires ready. The guy's actually standing there with two tires. You know what I mean? Like the old Yosemite Sam, you know what I mean, with the with the guns. He's waiting for the car to pull up. and the car stops, and it's organized chaos. And I just couldn't believe in 9 seconds they're fueling the car up, they're changing the tires, they're pulling the film off the window, like all of the stuff that they do. That coordination is crazy to me, and that was the thing that stood out the most. But also, I mean, just the speeds that these guys are doing around the track too.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I had a moment to talk to Alvin Kamara on Friday when he was out there about, you know, getting involved. And he's like, look, man, he goes, I approached NASCAR. We started talking, and they're like, come, let's do this. Let's go together. He said they've been so wonderful to work with him with everything that he wanted to do that he got to know the people, the sport, and he's like, I'm hooked for life, just like you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what it is. It just the appreciation you have for – what you're witnessing is, and you know what, I'm not going to lie, I had to catch myself driving back from there, man. You know what I mean? Hey, listen, man, you know, Team Camaro, you know what I mean? And I just had to catch myself on 24, like, hey, man, you watched it. That doesn't mean you have to live it.
Teron Davenport is hanging out with us. So you mentioned the former athletes. I'll guarantee you, if you look through the pit crew rosters, you will recognize some names. Because there's, you know, NFL or college or whatever. I mean, that's what they look for. And my favorite part of this, you know, when you probably noticed that there can be some scuff ups on the track, and then there might be some discussions after the race. Every pit crew always has the big dude that's kind of like the enforcer, like that's yeah. gonna stand yeah. next to the driver to make sure that nothing gets out of hand.
Yeah, and there was the number 9 car, was it Kyle Busch?
The 9 car is Chase Elliott, yeah.
No, not Chase Elliott. So it was – I want to say it was Kyle Busch, like just before one of the overtimes where, like, the pace car was driving, and then he moved out the way, and as they revved up, somebody kind of, like, clipped him, and he spun out.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
He was actually right in front – was it Busch? I think it was Busch.
Yeah, well, Ross Chastain
– Chastain.
Got wrecked, yeah, by Larson, Kyle Larson.
Yeah, and you could tell, like, he was mad about it, so I wonder if they had a conversation afterward. But, yeah, you're right. It does seem like they have an enforcer at every pit, man. That's funny.
So, I you know, and I've said this before. I've like I said to start this, I've been a fan since I was a kid. And you're right that there was a misconception, and it was a lot of it was NASCAR's fault, that it was a good old boy, you know, Southern kind of, you know, sport, and there wasn't a lot of diversity. That's really changed in the last 5 years or so, obviously with Michael Jordan's involvement and Bubba Wallace and, you know, several others. And so I think personally it's been very cool to see, and I'm glad that NASCAR kind of woke up and recognized that they needed to do that more of that, because I love stories like yours, and it doesn't matter your background or where you come from, but people that say, like, I went to the race and I had a blast and I'm going to go back. Like, that to me is what I love hearing. So, you know, the fact that you were texting me and reached out, and obviously I was there working, so I'm sad I didn't get to see you, but I just think stories like this are fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, like, I was just surprised even just walking through the parking lot, you know, to and from my car, like, it wasn't like I was in the Dukes of Hazzard movie. Like, you know, there were so many people. There were black people, you know. Like, it was cool to see the mixture, and I wasn't expecting that. And, I mean, you're right. Like, it's one of those things where you go and you experience it, and you tell yourself, man, I'm not going to miss another one of these. You know, and that's really what happened. Jeffrey Simmons was there, you know.
Jeff was there?
Yeah, I ran into Big Jeff there. He and his lady, you know. So it was cool, man. Just seeing everybody there, and just like I said, just the energy was dope.
Well, I tell you what, we'll figure it out, because it's in the Titan season. It could be a little difficult. We got to get you to Bristol, because a short track race on a Saturday night, you want to see controlled chaos. And maybe a little out of control chaos. That's the place to go. So we got to get you to a short track at some point.
Yeah, for sure. There were some Titans fans that mentioned that, you know. So yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, the training camp's going to be here before you know it. I look forward to it at the end of the month. Good talking to you, Teron. Thanks so much for sharing your experience.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys giving me the chance to talk about it, man.
For sure. He is TD. We'll talk to you soon. Teron Davenport joining us on the program from ESPN. And I think he's going to be on with the Midday Show to talk some football later today. Look, so, man, appreciate him.
Don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Don't knock it till you try it. And you go out there, and I've heard that from so many people about NASCAR that it's
– And look, and they admit it. Like, it was kind of their fault, you know, that they didn't do enough to make it an inclusive sport. And that all changed. And, I mean, we know that, you know, a lot of it changed, you know, during COVID and stuff. But I'm really glad to see it now, you know, in the diversity. I mean, you got Haley Deegan, who's a up-and-coming driver that she's been in the Truck Series, been in the Xfinity Series. You know, obviously Danica Patrick before that, and there have been others, you know. But I want to see more, you know, women getting involved in racing. And, you know, I just think – it makes any sport better to have that kind of diversity. So certainly has been cool to see. And then, you know, Pitbull, you know, is involved as an owner,
heck
which
yeah,
I know you
is.
Love that. Nashville's own team.
I was going to laugh about, he said, Pit Crew, about, you know, they got ex-athletes. Remember we watched that video of Bryce Young?
Yeah.
Trying to pick a tire. The tire was bigger than he was. I was like, oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But it's funny. There's a ton of, like, former offensive linemen that are the tire carriers or whatever, that, you know, they're also the big dude, the enforcers.
Yeah.
Mike Organ was telling me that he had an interview with there's a big guy from Kyle Busch's team that kind of broke up the fight a few weeks ago. And Mike Organ got to talk to him, and it's like, you always get Chocolate Myers, who's the gas man for Dale Earnhardt forever. You know, did an interview with Dale Jr., was talking about that Jr. was like, so you were the enforcer? And he goes, well, you know, your daddy had a way of, you know, making people a little upset. I was just there to make sure it didn't get out of hand.
By the way, you talked about Mike Organ talking to a guy who's really big and tall. Look, Mike Organ's tiny. I mean, Nick Frazier looks down on Mike Organ. That's how tiny Mike Organ is.
I said, look, I saw Mike Organ over the weekend. You know, his cat was with him. It was great.
God, we got to do something about that. If y'all don't know, follow Mike Organ on social media. He adopted this cat. God bless him, but the cat is – I don't have the heart to tell him that the cat's a bat, and it's going to bite him and give him rabies. And I don't have – I can't tell him that yet.
Meow.
He's got to know.
All right. What we got at 10:30?
10:30. If you are a pickleball fan, which evidently 99.8% of you are, there's a huge, huge pickleball event this weekend at Chase's favorite place, the Fairgrounds.
I love the Fairgrounds.
It's a big deal involving a guy that a lot of you grew up in the 90s. You remember this guy's name very well. We'll talk to him at 10:30 today about the event. And here's the good news about this event this weekend. Everybody's invited. Everybody's invited. Be a lot of fun. If you play pickleball, you want to hear this.
Indeed, you do. 615-737-1025.
Physically, you're here. Mentally, are you on the beach already?
I'm getting there. I'm ready. I'm ready for sure. We'll get back to our question of the day coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063, The Game. So Spice Girls for the rest of the show, is that what we're going with? I like this. I like this plan. This just kind of puts me in a vacation mood.
I love people like, oh, I can't stand them. And they, you know, everybody walks off and in their car, they'll play Spice
Girls.
So
I was just in a group text about this. If they announced later this afternoon that they were doing a reunion tour and, like, say it's like 10 dates, every freaking one of them would sell out. Like,
absolutely.
That.
What's this group? Group texture.
Okay, I have other friends besides you.
Are you in this, Chase?
No, I'm not.
Dr. Crane?
I'm not in this group text, Joe.
I'm sorry.
I'm in other group texts as well, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, there's more.
Who are you in a group text with?
My family.
Okay.
My brother.
Joe just pops.
Yeah. Hey, guys. It's the Frasers. Hey. Yeah,
how we doing?
What's happening?
So are you guys all doctors or what? It's probably his first line.
Well, we'll do all that. Our question of the day is, a lot of responses, I'll say real quick, because the Preds on paper now have what I think is the greatest team they've ever assembled. Of course, it's got to play out this fall and the winter. But what do you think is the greatest one-year professional sports team of all time? One year, one season, the greatest team of all time. We've got some great responses. We got some guys who've weighed in on the 86 Giants, 89 49ers, the 2000 Ravens, and on and on. There is no incorrect answer.
No, it's so up to it's up to you. It's all open to interpretation.
you know, it's funny about baseball. Had the Braves won it, that 91 Braves team was so, even though I was mad they traded Murphy, was so fantastic watching that run down the stretch. And, of course, the Twins had to beat them in seven games in 91. But as a Braves fan, man, that was, watching that was a lot of fun. Baseball, though, I go back, like, you know, the 80 Phillies were a great team. The 86 Mets were a great team. On and on and on. So this is fun to think about, walk down memory lane.
615-737. No, I couldn't think of how I wanted to transition that. It was like,
you can do whatever you want, pal.
Yeah. So I said the 95-96 Bulls.
It's fine. I mean, that's my
answer.
Pretty good team, you know? Yep. There's those great. So we had a vote for the 83 Sixers team that swept the Lakers in the championship. Moses Malone, Dr. J. Was Mo Cheeks on that team, maybe? I mean, that was a hell of a team in 83.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. So just the 1 year, you know?
All right, so can I tie this in to NASCAR? I mean, I know that, you know, it's drive. They are teams. They are race teams. But if I were going to answer this question for a NASCAR team, 1987, Dale Earnhardt. That year for him, like, they could have won just about every race. And I think he won like 10.
97.
87.
87.
Mm-hmm. The old Wrangler car. Like, they were just so dominant.
80. I'm processing the Wrangler car because I always go back to the Goodrich car.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I think I sent you guys, and I've told this story before, that when they switched this, when Wrangler left and they switched this sponsorship to Goodrich, GM wanted it to be blue because, you know, they were blue. And so Richard Childress and Dale Earnhardt were like, nah, I think it needs to be black. I think black is just going to get people's attention. And so they took a car and painted half of it blue like GM wanted and half of it black like they wanted. And so they had the side-by-side. And Childress told the story. By the way, I saw Richard Childress. He and I were standing next to each other watching our buddy Tim Duggar play.
Okay.
Before pre-race. That was pretty cool. But
was this when you were sniffing Hardy as well?
No, okay. It was before that.
Okay,
so the GM execs look at the car and then look at Childress and go, "Okay, yeah, you're right. We're gonna go black," and they painted it black and never looked back.
Never looked back. Can I ask you? And I don't mean to be a smart ass with this question.
That's okay.
How much of NASCAR? How should I phrase? How much of NASCAR died the day Dale Sr. died?
A lot of it. I mean, it changed the sport. I don't think you've ever had a driver that had that kind of presence and aura that he had. I mean, and look, I mean no disrespect to Jeff Gordon or Jimmy Johnson or Mark Martin or, you know.
I think they know.
But they know. Like, there will never be Jimmy's problem will always be that, well, they changed the rules. So, you know, Dale and Richard won seven championships the hard way. You know, you won seven championships under the new rules. So he's always going to have to fight that.
Okay.
You know, Gordon was the new NASCAR, the pretty boy, you know, California. He was a California Indy boy, you know, that Indianapolis, yeah. That area. I think he's from California, though. So they just never had, they, you know, and Dale Jr. had like the support and everybody was behind him, but he wasn't his dad.
No.
And honestly, like, I feel, you know, and if you have watched the Dale Jr. download, that's kind of been his therapy, you know, to kind of go through some of that stuff. And it's like, you kind of feel for him that it's, you know, if he could go back again and be, you know, Dale Dubin or Dale McCabe or Dale Smith or whatever, yeah. It's like, how different. And it's not that he doesn't appreciate, you know, his family and his heritage and all that, but I mean, it was different. Like, it's a lot different than Chase Elliott. It's a lot different than Ryan Blaney, you know, that their dads were racers. I mean, his dad was Dale Earnhardt.
Where was Dale Jr. on the track that day?
Third.
Who was
or
one,
second?
Two?
Second, yeah, he was second.
Michael
was one. Dale Jr. was so Dale was right in front of him.
Okay, and then follow me in this. Michael Waltrip was in Dale's car.
Correct.
That he owned.
First race in Dale's car.
Was Dale holding back the rest of the field to let – you can answer.
Dale was blocking.
Okay.
Dale – and so there's a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, that, like, Richard Childress was pissed at him on the radio of, like, what are you doing? You got the car. Go win the race.
Right.
And Dale was being very uncharacteristic because he wanted – and he had said to like, he had basically said all along that to Michael and to Dale Jr. – he said to Michael, you, me, and Dale Jr. are going to go win this race. One of us is going to go win this race. The three of us are going to move up through the field. We're going to win this race. I mean, he had been saying that all week. Like, it was like, you, me, and Dale Jr., we're going to be together. We're going to do this. And Michael had never won a race. Michael had – he was like 0 for 400-something in his career. He had never won a race. And obviously Dale Jr. was going into his second year. He'd won a couple at that point. And I just think he looked at it as, I'm going to let my buddy – and he and Michael were very close. Yeah. I'm going to let my friend or my son
do and that's it. His car.
Right.
On the team.
Right. And so I get it. I mean, if Richard, you know.
How does that work, though? You drive for somebody else and you own another team. That's nope. just.
You can't really do that anymore.
No, that's just
well, I mean,
crazy.
You can. Denny's doing it. Denny Hamlin's doing it. But so I guess you can do it.
But yeah.
It's,
okay.
It's, yeah, it's different.
I just, you know, what that day meant. And it was just yeah. a tragic day.
There's a show that or a documentary that Fox did a few years ago called The Day. Very well done. And it has, you know, Dale Jr.'s perspective, Michael's perspective, Darrell Waltrip's perspective, Larry McReynolds is in it, Mike Helton is in it. It has some PR, like Dale Jr.'s old PR guy and Dale Earnhardt's PR guy.
Right.
It like, so Michael didn't know for a while. Like, he's in victory lane celebrating.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, he was like, you know, the thing that was weird to me, like, I have all this emotion that I just won my first race, and I keep looking around. I'm like, well, where the hell is Dale? You know, it was like that. It's like, wow. Dale should be, where's Dale? You know, it's kind of that thing. And then once they kind of realized, like, oh, this could be bad, they had to tell them, hey, let's temper the celebration a little bit. And that's when Michael was like, okay, Dale Jr.'s not here. Dale's not here. Teresa's not here. Something's not right.
Right.
And nobody would tell him.
Wow.
And he finally got on an elevator to go somewhere. And that's when they told him.
Who was the driver that ran to the car and looked in?
Kenny Schrader. Yep. And there's a really good interview with Dale Jr. and Kenny Schrader, where Dale Jr. was like, he pulled out a piece of paper and he goes, I wrote this down many years ago. You don't have to say anything, but I'm going to read it. And basically it was, Kenny, I want to thank you for keeping the darkest moment in our family, you know, to yourself. Because Kenny leaned in the car and knew.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
He could tell. And there's like a story of Dale gets to the infield care center looking for his dad, and he walks by a room with Schrader in it, and they barely make eye contact, but it was like he knew. That's when he knew.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's all – and they're doing – Dale's doing a new documentary on him, I think.
Well, I remember the next week I got sent to Rockingham.
Yeah.
And Dale Jr. wrecked on the second or third lap.
Yep.
And I'll never forget the media center, pit row, because it had been – was it postponed the day before? I think it might have been. And the I've never felt that silence.
No,
again.
But
wow.
Steve Park, who also drove for Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, won that race. So, you know, that helped. And then a couple weeks later, Harvick wins at Atlanta in Dale's car.
Yeah.
You know, that was the one that it was like, okay, all right, you know, this we're getting through this. You know, he wins it with Dale's team, and then when Junior went back to Daytona and won that race, that's kind of when it was okay, but it was
It's 23 years ago, man.
Yeah, crazy. It's hard to believe. Real quick, let's see. Janelle, best sports team ever. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd say in 2011, the Green Bay Packers against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl. It was Aaron Rodgers' big win.
Okay.
So you like that 2010 Packers team?
Yes.
All right.
That's a pretty good team.
Yeah, it's the only one that Aaron got. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, but that was, I mean, that I remember that Super Bowl because I think everybody had picked Pittsburgh going into that.
Well, it was the ice storm.
Yeah.
Hit Dallas. A lot of people got stranded and couldn't get there. Yeah. And then, so that was a big deal. That's crazy to think that's Aaron Rodgers' only Super Bowl appearance.
All right. We'll talk some pickleball
coming
up next here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game here on this Tuesday. We always like keeping it local and big events coming to our town, so take it away, Joe.
Not only are we your favorite sports show, we're also your favorite party show around town. We got a party this weekend.
This is the party.
It is. We have Billy McGee's Worldwide of Pickleball event happening this weekend, and Billy McGee's on the phone with us. Billy, good morning. How are you, sir?
Joe, doing great. Long time no chat, but can you hear us okay? We're driving north to Nashville.
We can hear you perfectly. Again, Billy McGee, he's on the phone with us. Billy, talk about this big pickleball event this weekend that's happening, and it's a huge deal, and it's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday.
So I'm going to back you up. When you first talked to me back in 2022, the first year we started the festival, and I had told you then that the whole mission was to expand the game of pickleball throughout Nashville and Middle Tennessee. At that time, Stephanie Lane, who has become the queen of Nashville pickleball, she and I got together and started talking about what we could do to help motivate the city of Nashville and Parks and Recs to build pickleball courts. Fast forward 2 years, we now have Parks and Recs pickleball courts being built all over Nashville. The first new pickleball indoor facilities are coming. Pickleball Kingdom, Picklers, I think there are three or four of those opening in the next year. It's gone crazy, but our Pickleball Fest is on a six-year plan. We're in year three to make Nashville the pickleball and music capital of the world. And that is what's coming up this weekend, the continuation of growing the festival into becoming the largest pickleball festival in the U.S.
It's a big deal. It's at the fairgrounds. It starts Saturday. It's $40. But not only that, but it benefits a couple of great charities, Billy, if I'm reading this correctly. And you've got food trucks there. You got top pros. You got celebrities. You got giveaways. I mean, this is more than just showing up and playing the game of pickleball. I mean, this is get you involved, tell you how it's going, why it's so important, why it's so big. I don't think you've left anything untouched here. This is an all-encompassing pickleball event, Billy.
I think that we look around the U.S. and across the planet how fast pickleball has grown, Joe. Think about it. 4 years ago, they were the U.S. Pickleball Association talking 3, 4, 5 million people playing. Today, they're talking 60 million. There hasn't been a vertical movement in health and wellness in this country since racquetball and tennis back in the 70s when it comes to a racquet sport. So this vertical climb is unprecedented, and I think what you're seeing in Nashville, there was really only at that time a Music City Pickleball Club that was growing, but now you have Dinkville, which is that organization has got thousands of members in it. You've got Nashville Pickleball, you've got Music City Pickleball, and what we want to keep this as is truly a festival. I don't want it to be a tournament. I don't want people coming and playing and losing or winning and complaining. And we're going to stay with this being a festival of sorts. You get to play with everybody. I think last year we had a lot of fun because some of the former Titan, Matt Castle, Eric Decker, a lot of the guys, Jim Arnold, they were all out there playing, and yet people playing with them didn't even know who they were. And then when they found out, they go, how come we didn't get an autograph? I said, well, go get it. It allows us to market the sport, everyone enjoy themselves, have some beer, have some wine, play some pickleball, get some pictures, and it just continues to build friendships, relationships, and moves us towards that year six goal of the event. I can't tell you what year six is going to be, but I can tell you next year we're moving from the one fairground building. I've now taken over the entire fairgrounds to bring it to a 50-court facility with live bands, et cetera. So it's going to continue to grow.
I love it. We're talking to Billy McGeehee, the big weekend. Billy McGeehee's Wild World of Pickleball. The website is bmwopb.com or search as Pickleball Nashville event. You can see it there. Are you surprised how well, Bill, look, you were here in Nashville. You worked with the Nashville Cats. You were the original general manager. You know how special Nashville is, Billy. But just the way folks have embraced this event the last 2 years, it's been pretty cool for you, I would think.
You know, Joe, you and I go back to the years when we had the original Cats, and I've been following the new Cats. I don't want to call them new Cats, but the Nashville Cats and Jeff Fisher and the team. I've seen them doing a pretty darn good job at handling situations that are difficult when a fledgling league is starting back up. But I think the people that went this year had a great time. Actually, if you can help me, I've been trying to get Jeff Fisher and maybe some of the Cats players and cheerleaders to come play this coming weekend. Would love to have them. I'm trying to Corey Fleming and Robert Gaddy and a bunch of the original Cat players are coming.
Yeah.
But I think that when you look at a sport that anyone and everyone can play, and I'm telling you, from the moment you walk out onto a court with that paddle and pickleball, you start having fun. There is no end in sight of how big this sport can get. And if you look globally, I'm saying 100, 125 million people in the next 3 years. But in Nashville alone, I could see Nashville and surrounding areas easily being between 50,000 and 100,000 players. So your parks and recs have a lot of work to do over the next 4 or 5 years to keep up with that growth, the indoor facilities, and the fact that they will become, oh, and let me jump to this just quickly.
Yeah.
You have almost, I believe, 60 NCAA colleges playing a club or varsity pickleball team now.
Oh, man.
So it used to be, we would say, for the old folk, but the average age now is probably in the mid-30s.
That's great. That is so great. Again, the event is Saturday at the fairgrounds, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. It'll be a lot of fun. Billy McGeehee's Wild World of Pickleball. Billy, thank you for your time. We'll continue promoting this. We'll get the good word out, and I will see you over there Saturday morning, my man. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing you, and Jim Arnold says, bring it on.
We love Jim Arnold. All right, Billy, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. Y'all take care. See
all
you
right.
soon.
Yes, sir. Billy McGeehee's Wild World of Pickleball this weekend. Chaser, you'd be out of town. Otherwise, we'd go over there and we would mop the floor.
I feel like I need to learn pickleball. Everybody's told me that I'd be good at it.
You know who's really good? It's our good friend Nick Paranjape.
Oh, really?
He's really good. We got to take him down. So, Dr. Crane, the Chaser's gone. You and me are going to run the gamut.
I can see Dr. Crane being like an assassin at pickleball.
The Flying Ernie's, baby.
I played in the celebrity tournament 2 years ago, and the JoJo went 0-for-8. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I played pickleball, I would say, about 3 months ago over at the old Maryland Farms YMCA. It's not like a pickleball facility.
Yeah.
This lady's name, I believe, was like Kate or something like that. On the upper ages of the, say, just living. And had all
you the said older? Good Lord.
I don't want to be rude.
How's that rude?
She was an elderly lady.
This reminds me of a story you told me about a coach, now GM, one time.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, she was senior citizen, okay? And I was playing with my buddy Nick. We're both named Nick. Not Nick Keiser, my other buddy Nick. And so, you know, I was playing all of a sudden, like, really ripping it in there. I couldn't hit a ball. We lost 12 to nothing. We got skunked. And she goes, oh, nice game. I don't play that often. I was like, you're hustling me. You're hustling me. I don't like that.
It's like Uncle Phil with the pool. And
she had all the Copperfit stuff on. Elbows, knee pads. I'm like, goodness gracious.
Oh, she was all about it.
Got hustled.
Too bad.
You got hustled. That's what that sounds like.
Yep.
Indeed I did.
Good job, Dr. Green. That's okay. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We will come back, tell you what day it is, and also celebrity birthdays here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a great day. Talk some pickleball, greatest sports teams. The Predators having such a huge day yesterday. We'll continue to react to that. Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, Brady Shea, now members of the Nashville Predators.
On paper, it's fantastic. That kind of led us to our question of the day, is the greatest one-year sports team of all time. A lot of great responses. You guys are fantastic, as always, letting us know what you think about that.
Yes, indeed. Just saw our GM, Sean Fort, come in here with his son, Harrison. I thought he was coming in to let us know Harrison was taking over. But
yeah. If you could do that on a Monday, we'd appreciate that. We have the rest of the week off.
That would be fantastic, right? For sure. So tomorrow, Omni Hotel, usually on Thursdays, but we're off on the 4th and the 5th. By the way, I haven't said this publicly, but I'm really excited about this. You know, you always got to think about special programming and stuff for the 4th. So we got a lot of different things that we're going to do on 4th of July. It's hard to believe, but this 4th of July will be 15 years since we lost Steve McNair. And yeah. 5 years ago, Darren McFarland, Derek Mason, and Floyd Reese did a very, very cool special called Air McNair, the Story of a Titan. We're going to actually air that on at 7 o'clock Thursday morning for the 4th of July. It was for the 10th anniversary, but now, you know, in the 15th, and, you know, to hear Floyd tell stories and talk about Steve will be cool. Jared Stillman has a training camp preview show that he's put together that will air at 8 o'clock. You'll hear the Phillies and the Cubs. And then I'm super excited about this. We'll do this on the 4th and the 5th, starting at 3 o'clock on the 4th. The 10th anniversary of Vanderbilt's first national championship in baseball. You will hear the final, all three games in their entirety, Joe Fisher on the call, of Vanderbilt and Virginia for the 2014 College World Series. And then on the 5th, the 2019 College World Series when they beat Michigan to win their second. And then you got the Cats in Orlando that night for the playoffs. So we got
full
you covered.
Day, man.
Yeah, full day. We're going to take a little time off, but looking forward to that. And then on Saturday night, you can hear Game 6 Remastered. We did that a few years ago, the 2017 Western Conference Final when the Preds beat Anaheim to go to the Cup Final. So we got all that stuff planned here on 102.5. 106.3 the game. But with that, let's get to what day is it and celebrity birthdays.
All right.
Dr. Crane, you get to do this live with Joe tomorrow at the Omni.
Oh, boy. I'm
going to let you run the show tomorrow. How about that?
Okay, thank you. That is a lot of trust. I appreciate your trust. Thank you. First on the list here for what day it is, Freedom from Fear of Speaking Day. That is a long way.
Everybody
to say
should
it,
learn how to speak in public.
I agree. Just throw them out there to the wolves.
Yep.
We also have I Forgot Day. That kind of happens.
That's me every day.
Made in the USA Day.
Amen, brother.
There you go. We also have National Anisette Day. It is like a type of drink. It's made from the anise plant, A-N-I-S-E.
I'll pass, but thanks.
It's like a sugary syrup type drink.
I'll pass, but thank you.
Delicious. We also have Special Recreation for the Disabled Day. So those,
always.
Yes, indeed. We also have World Sports Journalist Day. How about that?
Thank you.
There you go.
Give me cupcakes later for that.
Okay. The last one we have is World UFO Day.
Oh, you believe in UFOs, Dr. Crane?
I think so, yeah.
No, that's not what I asked.
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right, time for celebrity birthdays. You got to get them within 2 years. First birthday, comedian Larry David. How old is Larry David?
73.
74.
77. You missed it. Mm. Now, if Chase McCabe doesn't get this, you need to be off for the next week and a half.
Okay, good. I'm going to do that anyway.
Richard Petty.
Oh, the king. 86.
He's 87. Take care, Chase.
Oh, dang.
You've been banished for a week and a half. Jose Canseco.
He'll only do interviews if you pay him. Jose Canseco, 53.
56.
60.
Damn.
His brother, Ozzy Canseco.
Wait.
They're twins. Is
so
that what you're telling
60.
me?
60.
Tomas Vokoun. Today is his birthday.
Former Predator goaltender.
How old is Tomas Bokun?
48.
51.
48 exactly. Chaser's up 2-1. Former San Jose Shark, Joe Thornton.
Jumbo Joe is 44.
43.
45. Chaser 3-1. You got to kick his butt going out, man. She lives here in Nashville. Singer Michelle Branch. Isn't she married to one of the Black Keys guys? I think so.
No idea. Michelle Branch is 52.
47. 41.
No.
Sure she likes knowing that you thought she was older.
I'm sorry.
It's all right, though. Ashley Tisdale was a Disney star, Disney Channel star, one of those shows. Ashley Tisdale.
34.
38.
God, 39. 3-2. The Boss versus Dr. Crane. Who? Lindsay Lohan. This pitcher here, absolutely getting it done.
Good loud.
Lindsay Lohan. 38.
41.
38 exactly. Boss is up 5-2. All right, here we go. Speed round. Get ready for this. Lindsay Lohan, fun fact. I don't have Margot Robbie.
Oh, talk about getting it done.
No Marvy. Doubt.
Margot Robbie is, say,
34. Boss is up 6-2. My goodness. Here we go. We'll run some here. He was Quincy's assistant on Quincy, Robert Edo. Which, by the way, Quincy is an amazing show from the 70s and 80s. Robert Edo, who was the extra medical examiner.
73.
76.
93. Oh. She played Flo on Alice. Polly Holiday. How old is she?
80.
82.
87. Right decade.
Mick Jagger's ex-wife, model actress Jerry Hall.
77.
73.
68. On down here, and I think that might be all we have for today. All right, two more. Last one. All right, so Chase, you can get 8, which will be close to the record of all time. Brett the Hitman Hart. Today's his birthday.
Really? The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. The excellence of execution is...
Come on.
62.
67.
67 exactly.
Wow.
But that's all we got.
I lose well by done. 2, 1.
Bossman wins 6-4.
There's not one left, no.
Well, I mean, yeah, let me find one real quick here. There's that's a fine. Guy on
no,
the,
we're good.
No, he won.
There's
won.
A guy real quick on the team. He's on Frasier. His name was Saul Rubinek. I don't know which character he played. It says he was on Frasier. 76. That's it.
That's going to do it for us, and that's going to do it for me for a week and a half.
So in honor of Chase being gone tomorrow, Dr. Crane and I will be down at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes. Come by and say hi. We will have extra bowls of oatmeal in honor of the boss man being
gone. Eat some
gone.
Bacon in my honor.
Will do. I sure will.
Well done. Look
bacon,
forward to doing that.
Eggs, sausage would be great.
Don't be late either.
It'll be good.
Have fun, brother.
We will. We'll see you when I get back and after some meetings and stuff like that. But looking forward to when I get back, we're going to be on the stretch to training camp and ready to go.
Get it done. Love you, man. Be careful. Be careful. All right, to our guys out there as well, we end every show with this, letting you know how much we love you. On your cell phone, you can dial 988. If you need to talk to somebody, please do that. If you need to talk to somebody, you can talk to us. Anytime, we're here for you. As we tell you every single show, every single day, you are tremendously loved. God has you on this earth for a specific purpose that only you can do. And if something happened to you, you'd be tremendously missed. Please know that. Know that we love you.
Amen to that. Peace, love, rock and roll. Willie and D-Mace is next.